Mr. President and members of this honorable court, I appear before you at the suit of the king as the prosecutor of Lieutenant Colonel Brereton, prisoner at the bar. It's unnecessary that I should occupy the time of the court in expatiating on the nature of the charges here preferred against the prisoner. I shall therefore content myself with observing that among those charges are some which carry a culpability such as I verily believe to be altogether unprecedented in the case of a British officer. Those brutal riots, with their disgraceful consequences, have formed a theme for discussion in every public print and in every private society throughout the kingdom.
I hear he's pleading not guilty to all charges.
Waste of time, I should have thought.
It was a case of pure cowardice. The man was petrified with fear.
I thought him courageous.
He was totally incompetent, quite unable to deal with the situation.
It was more than incompetence, Mr. Ludlow. Brereton is a dangerous man.
A Man of Too Much Honor by Elizabeth Holford, with Alan Moore as Colonel Brereton and Howard Gurney as Milford. A Man of Too Much Honor.
Now, Mr. Pinney, are you mayor of this town?
I am.
Now, will you tell the court what were the circumstances in which you decided to ask for detachments and soldiers to be sent to Bristol in October last, 1831?
Well, the occasion was, as the court knows, the jail delivery, which had been fixed for Saturday, October the 29th. Sir Charles Wetherill, who is recorder of the city, was due to open the assize on that date. And we, or that is, the magistracy, soon realized that his arrival would excite strong, in fact, violent public feelings. The friends of reform had stirred up the lowest elements of the city against him. There were noisy meetings, placards appeared on walls, and some of them very abusive.
Sir Charles Wetherill is, of course, also a member of Parliament, is he not?
Exactly, yes, and it was in that capacity that he'd spoken out against reform and apparently incensed the people of Bristol.
And I'll be pleased to tell the court what steps were taken by the magistracy to guard the recorder.
Difficult to decide what to do. Various ideas were put forward, and well, finally, Lieutenant Claxton suggested that the seamen of Bristol should be asked to form a protecting force. They are usually, I may say, a most well-behaved body of men. He held a meeting on board his ship, the Earl of Liverpool, on October the 18th. I was with Alderman Milford on that evening, and we got the news at his house.
Mr. Pinney, a word in your ear, if I may.
Yes, certainly.
Let us withdraw, shall we, and leave the ladies to applaud. The town clerk here has just received word of Lieutenant Claxton's meeting.
Yes, I've arranged to have intelligence brought to me here immediately. I thought in the circumstances you'd wish to hear as soon as possible.
Yes, and what was the intelligence?
Bad news, I'm afraid, Mr. Finney. The seamen have absolutely refused.
Oh, dear.
There have been noisy scenes.
Yes, not a riot, I suppose?
Not quite. They held a meeting and have passed a resolution saying they were loyal to the king, but will not be made a cat's paw of the corporation.
Oh. Cat's paw, indeed. This is the political union. This is Herapath's language. These damned radicals are stirring up the whole town.
They're stirring up the whole country. I hear there were several people killed in the riots at Derby.
Yes.
They broke into the city jail, you know.
Yes, and they set the castle on fire at Nottingham.
That is why we must have adequate protection for the assize opening. I think we should go back to the plan suggested at our last meeting.
Well, then ask the Home Secretary for a detachment of dragoons.
Yes, I hear he's likely to be sympathetic. They say he's very perturbed about the unrest up and down the country. Encore!
I never thought my first act as mayor would be to send for the military.
These are unusual times, Mr. Pinney. When I was in London last week, I heard talk of revolutionary armies being raised in the north of England, drilling at night under the cover of darkness.
Do you believe it?
Well, everyone in London does. The only question is how many men are involved. Some say 50,000, some say more. Miss Milford.
What should I sing for an encore, Papa?
Mr. Pinney, my eldest girl, Emma. She's joined us since dinner.
How do you do, sir?
Last time I saw you, Emma, well, you were in pinafores. And now I suppose you've come out.
Well, I'm half out. When there are even numbers, I dine in the nursery. What shall I sing?
Oh, anything you like, dear. With not too much trilling.
I'll do my best.
Charming, charming. I can't believe she's grown up so quickly.
Yes, you'll be losing her to some young man before long.
My wife has some ideas on the subject, I believe. It's agreed, then. We send a deputation to Lord Melbourne.
Yes, I suppose we must.
And I have another suggestion. We should ask Herapath to get his political union to provide a civil guard for the record.
Yeah, but do you think they would?
But they should. They're pledged to help bring in reform without breakdown of law and order.
Oh, it would ensure keeping them out of mischief on that day.
Yeah, but would you trust them?
It seems to me the political unions are getting altogether too much power.
Well, I trust Herapath. He is a gentleman after all.
Yes, though how a member of such an old family, and a distinguished scholar, too, could degrade him.
Quite. He's a good mind wasted. Then, of course, he is a dissenter. And those who turn against the established church are the first to want to overthrow the established traditions of the country.
Yes, but would the political union agree to our bringing in the military?
There's probably no need to be very specific about that when we talk to Herapath.
Who would be in command of the soldiers?
I imagine they'd be under our local recruiting officer. That would be, what's his name? Brereton. Colonel Brereton.
No, I don't think I know him.
Well, I've met him. Seems an amiable fellow. 50-ish. Lost his wife 2 years ago. She was quite a young woman, I believe. Left him with 2 little girls.
Doesn't go into society much, does he?
Don't suppose he could afford it on his pay.
Well, if we are to send a deputation, I suppose it should be soon.
Without delay. We've only 12 days. Perhaps the town clerk will...
Oh, certainly, certainly. Well, he'll arrange everything. Now, whom should we ask to go?
Well, Emma, did you enjoy the party?
Yes, Papa. It was very pleasant.
Oh, we had a delightful evening. Lady Emily is charming, and she quite agrees with me about the Clifton Assemblies.
Assemblies?
That we must keep them exclusive. Mm. You know what a worrying time my committee has had with quite the wrong people trying to get invitations. But what a pity you had to withdraw for so long, my dear. You missed all the music.
We had corporation matters to discuss. There's some problems over the opening of the assize, but... However, all is being arranged quite satisfactorily. Well, the door shall have adequate protection when he comes down.
Why is he so unpopular?
Well, because as a good Tory, he spoke out in Parliament against the Reform Bill. The Lords have now had the sense to throw out. And some irresponsible and unprincipled men have worked on the poorest people in the town to feel they have a grievance against him.
The Whigs and Radicals.
Oh, the Whigs are quite respectable. We dine with several Whig families, do we not, Mr. Milford? Mm-hmm. Indeed, the Mayor is a Whig.
Prime Minister's a Whig. The Whigs are prepared to allow reform to come in as a matter of political expedience. The Radicals are the dangerous men. They want to overthrow the whole constitution.
Everyone talks about reform, but I'm not very sure what it is.
Well, my dear, it's hard to explain in a way you'd understand. Parliamentary reform is what he's chiefly talked about. You see, members of Parliament have always been elected by the peers of the realm, landowners and property owners, responsible people who know how affairs should be run. Mm. Now, these radicals want to overthrow the tradition of hundreds of years and extend the vote to a lot of tradesmen who know nothing about it.
So only the wealthy should vote?
Wealth brings responsibilities. That's why the magistracy of this town is made up of our sort of people. And it's the same with the government of the country.
I suppose we got our wealth through the slave trade.
Emma, don't keep plaguing Papa with questions.
Well, we did very largely. It's a great pity he was ever put a stop to. Your grandfather and others of his generation built up the commerce of this town and made it what it is, a second city in the land. I've tried to follow in his tradition, and I hope your brother will do the same.
Bristol owes a lot to families like ours. Mm. Don't forget that, Emma.
No, Mama.
Yes. Well, off with you to bed now and get your beauty sleep.
Good night, sir. Good night, Mama.
Good night, my love.
Emma asks rather too many questions. She should be thinking of young men and dances at her age. When is her next ball, by the way?
Next week. Mm-hmm. The biggest of the season. Oh, it do hope the assize opening will not interfere with it.
We'll make sure it doesn't, my dear.
2 the quartermaster of His Majesty's forces. Sir, I am in receipt of your letter of the 24th of October, informing me of the arrival in the Bristol area of 3 troops of dragoons to be placed under my command.
May I interrupt you, Tom?
Gus, my dear fellow, nobody told me you'd come.
I've been taking a professional look at your little daughter.
And how do you find her? Sit down.
Remarkably well, except when she remembers to cough. She's very fond of that cordial your good housekeeper gives her.
Then you don't think it's serious?
Certainly not. I've prescribed some pink medicine which will do no harm. You have 2 very healthy little girls, Tom, and worry inordinately about them.
Perhaps I do. But they are motherless. Mrs. Prickforth does her best. But they miss Olivia's love and care.
I know. I'll look in and see them as often as you like, if it reassures you.
Thank you. You'll take a glass of wine with me.
With pleasure.
You know, Gus, she was so young still. I would so willingly have died in her stead.
But you couldn't. Fate seldom makes the right demands on us, it seems. Don't brood on it.
Oh, I am pretty content most of the time. I have 9 good years to look back on. Makes a deal of difference, you know.
I see I've interrupted your letter writing.
Oh, it's the wretchedest thing. The magistrates have taken fright about the opening of the assize next weekend. 3 troops of dragoons are on their way here to be under my command.
I'm not surprised the corporation have taken fright. They're so damned unpopular that people will be glad of any excuse to throw rotten eggs at them.
I wish they'd make other arrangements for their own protection. It's not very pleasant to have to confront one's fellow townsmen at the head of a detachment of dragoons.
Well, I don't suppose it'll come to a confrontation. One look at those splendid red and gold uniforms and fearsome steeds, and the populace will retire to their homes.
Unless it has the opposite result.
I hear the political union is having one of its pro-reform meetings this week. That may have an inflammatory effect.
These causes should be let alone. Reform will come, it's bound to come. If only people would keep cool heads about it.
If everyone were as equable as you, Tom, the world would be a more comfortable place.
Good night to you. Good night. Good night, Banshee. Thanks for your excellent speech. Good night.
Hey, Mr. Arapath. That was a good speech you gave. I like what you said about the longer reform was delayed, the more the people would demand. It helps us to be patient. The Lord knows we've waited long enough.
I'm glad you support us, Mr.
Davis, sir. Davis. Mr. Sir Davis. It's the bishops that are to blame, I reckon. They throw out the bill. They talk of Christianity, but they don't care anything for the poor. There are ragged children here running about the streets with no one to care for them. It breaks my heart to see them. And when there are rich folk living in great houses...
I know, Mr. Davis.
...stuffing themselves with food and got their money by owning slaves...
I agree. But even when we get the reform bill passed, these things won't change at once, you know.
They'd like to make us their slaves, that's what I say. They take our money and they never count for it. They get a man down from London who despises us to judge our poor wretches in prison. And now they're bringing in soldiers to crush us if we dare speak against them.
Bringing in soldiers? Where did you hear this?
Well, it's true, sir. A man who came down in the mail coach this afternoon told my wife's cousin he passed columns of soldiers on horseback coming this way. This man, my wife's cousin's friend, he pulls down the window and asks one of the soldiers where they're going. And he tells them they're to be quartered near Bristol. And be on hand in case of any trouble when the recorder comes.
Why was I not told of this, Alderman Milford, when I was asked to persuade my members to form a guard for Sir Charles?
It was a recent decision.
One unprecedented in English history, I should think. I hope the magistrates will reconsider it.
It's too late for that, I fear. The dragoons have already arrived and taken up their quarters.
They will be the greatest provocation. There's feeling enough already in Bristol against the recorder.
Feeling roused up by you and your radical friends, my dear Herpath. People would be perfectly contented if you had not persuaded them they had grounds for resentment.
Perfectly contented? I'm afraid you and your like are living in a dream, Mr. Milford. Do you really imagine the people of Bristol are contented with a harsh and corrupt corporation which takes their money for its banquets and does nothing for them? They've borne it long enough. There is a spirit of inquiry in the land, and it has reached Bristol.
The old precepts will not do. They will be swept away whether you like it or not. We are at the threshold of a new era of reform. You must stand back, sir, or be swept under.
You won't frighten me with your demagogy, Herapath. Keep it for the rabble who come to your meetings.
Then let me give you a plain statement. Sir Charles must not come to Bristol. It's disgraceful that a politician should be allowed to hold office as a judge. He should resign now and not hold the assize.
Sir Charles is determined to come, and we consider he has every right.
I see I'm wasting my time. You are bent on provoking the people. I'll take my leave.
You'll not go back on your agreement to provide a guard for the recorder.
You surely do not imagine my union would support you in these circumstances. I could not ask it. However, they'll do nothing to disturb the peace on Saturday. I can assure you of that. How the rest of the populace will react to having soldiers in the city, I can only guess at. The responsibility will be yours.
Papa? Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know you had a visitor.
Professor Herapath is just leaving.
Good morning, Professor Herapath. I met you at Miss Bell's house, my old governess. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Shall I give your regards to Miss Bell? Or rather, Mrs. Hale, when I see her?
Please do.
Good morning, Alderman Milford. Yeah. Miss Emma.
Good morning.
There is no need for you to greet Professor Herapath so cordially, Emma. He is vice president of the political union, which is a dangerous and disruptive element in the town, and opposes the corporation at every possible opportunity.
Is he a revolutionary? He seemed so very nice when I met him at Miss Bell's.
Ah, and that's another thing. I've explained before, I don't wish you to visit there.
Oh, but I'm very fond of Miss Bell.
You have a childish attachment to your former governess, I don't doubt. But she holds views which I do not approve of, and she has married a dissenter.
Oh, but
look, I'm not prepared to discuss it further. I'm busy and I've much to think about. What did you want?
Mama would like to know if we may have the carriage. We have some shopping to do before the assembly.
Ah, the assembly, of course. You're buying a new gown?
No, a new sash.
Well, order a new gown if you wish, my dear. It's an important occasion for young ladies.
Thank you, Papa.
My dear, may I introduce Captain Gage of the 14th Dragoons and Captain Bonnington of the 3rd Dragoon Guards. My wife and my daughter, Emma.
Honored, ma'am. Miss Milford.
Good evening, gentlemen.
It was most kind of you to get his invitations, ma'am.
We are very glad to have you in the city, are we not, Miss Milford? I've been hearing such dreadful tales, I don't sleep easy in my bed. Lady Emily's sister was sitting down to dine with her family when some bestial-looking men broke into the house, armed with blunderbusses, and snatched the food off the table under their very eyes. And they say there are bands of ruffians setting fire to ricks not 30 miles from here.
Never fear, my dear. These gentlemen will protect us. I see the mayor has looked in. I must go and have a word with him.
You need have no fears for Saturday, ma'am. If there's any trouble, we shall charge and disperse them in 5 minutes. Shall we, Warrington? A crowd is no match for a detachment of mounted dragoons, I assure you.
I hope the horses won't be hurt. You rode past our windows when you came in yesterday and they looked so beautiful.
I regret you were only looking at the horses, Miss Milford. I'm sure I remember your face at the window.
Really?
Yes, certainly.
I don't remember you, but I saw you, Captain Warrington.
I don't think I recollect the...
Warrington never sees anybody. He looks straight ahead. A great mistake.
You'll be greatly in demand here. We haven't near enough young men and no officers.
Ladies and gentlemen, will you please take your partners for the quadrille?
May I have this dance, Miss Milford? Will you excuse us, ma'am?
Oh, certainly. Don't dash about and get too hot, my love.
Your deal,
sir. Your deal, Gus.
Oh, come on. Thought we might find you in the card room. I don't think you've met our new mayor. Mr. Finney, may I introduce Colonel Brereton, our local field inspecting officer.
How do you do, sir? Yes.
And Major Loinsworth, surgeon to the army.
Evening.
Oh, very glad to meet you both. I feel somewhat out of touch after having been abroad so long.
Bristol's a pleasant place to come back to, I find.
Indeed, yes, in spite of the present unrest. And that'll soon pass, I'm sure. Indeed, I believe we're not near so unsettled as most of the country. Of course, I'm in favor of reform myself, unlike my friend Milford.
We agree to differ.
Yes, well, we mustn't allow ourselves to be bullied by these radicals. And I'm very glad to know you'll be in charge of the troops, Colonel.
I shall keep them well out of the way. But of course, we shall be at the ready in case you need us.
Oh, I sincerely hope that won't be necessary. The Home Secretary was insistent they should only be used if absolutely unavoidable.
We won't go further than a few hisses and boos. This is the West Country, after all.
I hope you're right, Major. Well, gentlemen, I must be on my way. I only just looked in. I don't care for late hours.
I should not be let off so lightly, I fear. My daughter is dancing with one of your young officers and looks as though she's enjoying herself. Wait until your daughters are of dancing age, eh, Colonel?
Good night.
Good night.
Our new mayor seems a rather nervous character.
I'm sure his fellow magistrates will take good care of him.
I wonder why they chose a Whig when they're all Tories.
For the same reason as we've got a Whig government, to see reform through quietly.
Well, there doesn't seem much hope of that. Judged by the present state of affairs.
Well, Tories hold the Radicals to blame for that.
A plague on both the houses, I say. When they create this sort of situation and expect us to keep the peace.
Isn't that one of our younger lads wandering about?
Oh, good evening, Captain Warrington. I thought you were dancing with Emma Milford.
That was Captain Gage, sir. We were both introduced, but he...
Was quicker off the mark, eh?
I'm not much of a dancing man.
That's a poor excuse. You must secure her for the next dance. She's a pretty girl.
You were honored to be introduced. The Milfords rank exceedingly high in Bristol. Alderman Milford owns a vast deal of shipping and a vast deal of estates in the West Indies. So did his father. They're a wealthy Tory family. You can go no higher here.
Mr. Milford was kind enough to be friendly towards us.
He's a good friend to have. Powerful man. Would you care to join us for a game?
That's very kind, gentlemen.
He doesn't want to play cards, Gus. He's going to snatch Emma Milford from the arms of Captain Gage. Isn't that so, Captain?
I was hoping to do something with
this. Yes, well, away with you, then. Bold tactics.
Yes, sir. Good night.
Good night.
What a serious young man.
You know, I was serious at his age. Had dreams of glory. Planned to rival Wellington, no less. And I've ended by just being another undistinguished officer with nothing to be proud of. Still, I've always tried to look after my men. I don't think I've ever lost a man unnecessarily.
Wish I could say the same as a doctor. Could the play or not?
I'm sorry, I can't concentrate on this game. I suppose I'm a little tired.
You haven't long been out of bed. You look rather yellow still.
Do I? At all events, I don't feel like a late night. I think I'll be on my way now.
I'm ready to go as well.
Oh, we're getting old, Tom. I have my gig here. Ride with me as far as your house.
You dance very well, Captain Warrington. Don't look so anxious.
I'm afraid I've had little practice. I have been soldiering since I was of dancing age.
You speak as though officers never attended balls. Why did you choose to go into the army?
I never thought of doing anything else. My father and brother were soldiers, my grandfather was, and my great-grandfather. I can't imagine what I should have done if I had not been able to get a commission.
Have you ever killed anyone, Captain Warrington?
Well, yes. In the course of battle, you know. If we didn't kill them, they would kill us.
Yes, I suppose so. Well, now will we take hands again? Oh. That's right. You're becoming very proficient. But do you feel very nervous?
I'm dancing?
No, going into battle.
Oh, not really. There's no time to think.
I see.
You ask rather surprising questions, Miss Milford.
I have to take what opportunities I can to find out about things. I left school last summer.
What do young ladies do in Bristol when they have left school?
Oh, I drive out with Mama, take piano lessons, go to assemblies like this one. Not a very exciting life.
Do you want an exciting life?
I should like there to be something more than just marrying and living all my life in or near Bristol, which is what I probably will do.
What else could you do?
Oh, you sound like everybody else, except Miss Bell. She was my governess for 2 years when I was a little girl, and she made everything interesting. She said one should always be going forward. Every new generation had something to contribute, women as well as men.
She sounds like a blue stocking.
She said one should always think things out for oneself, never take anything for granted. So perhaps that has made me restless. My father didn't approve of her views at all, and when he found out she belonged to a society for the emancipation of slaves, she had to go. I thought I should never get over it.
Do you ever hear from her?
Oh, yes. She married and lives not far from us now.
And your parents allow you to visit?
Papa has forbidden it, unfortunately. That will make it quite difficult.
But you can still go?
Yes. I don't like deceiving my parents, but this matters to me very much.
I think you are a most remarkable girl, Miss Milford.
I'm afraid I'm rather ordinary. You'll soon hear that I've married the son of some other alderman and have an establishment of my own in the best part of Bristol.
Emma, my love, your father would like to go home now.
Well, then I suppose I must say goodnight, Captain Warrington.
If you would care to call some afternoon, we shall be pleased to see you. We're always at home between 2 and 4 o'clock.
Thank you, Mrs. Milford. I shall be delighted.
When will you come? Tomorrow?
I'm afraid I have to be on duty until after the weekend.
Monday, then?
I shall be most happy.
And do bring your friend.
Captain Gage?
Of course.
If you wish it.
Emma! The carriage is waiting.
Coming, Mama. Good night. I shall see you on Monday.
Frost in the air.
Very sharp. Only 7 weeks till Christmas. What the devil's that?
Whoa, there. Steady go. Whoa, whoa.
A bell and no bishops.
Oh, Charlie Wetherill. We're sending all back.
Mind, how dare you fighting the mare?
Oh, steady, girl. Look out, Jimmy, great fool. Steady now. Steady, steady. Steady.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Holding the day's work. Good night, gentlemen.
Good night to you. Come on, Gil. Here you go. Come on.
Hey, we want the bell.
Luckily, there was one sensible man among them.
I know that man. I know his face. He has a business down by the docks. Davis, that's the name. Good-hearted fellow. Does a good deal for the ragged children down there. But he can't take a drop of drink. Talks a lot of nonsense when he's drunk. Ah, here's my door.
Oh, hold him. Oh.
Will you come in for a little while?
No, not this evening, Gus. Children will be expecting me. Mrs. Prickforth said they never go properly to sleep until I've been in to kiss them goodnight.
Perhaps you'll dine with us next week.
After the weekend, yes. You know, I shall be glad when this assize opening is safely over.
You'll have 2 zealous young captains of dragoons to aid you.
Well, that's one thing which worries me. Zeal is not quite what is wanted in this situation.
Don't imagine we're going to have serious trouble, Tom.
I don't know. Our society here has a very elegant veneer, but it's built on the labor of a lot of underfed, dissatisfied people. One day the civilized surface will crack, and then what's underneath will come rushing out.
I think you're over-anxious.
Well, I don't mind admitting to you, Gus, that I fear a mob. Do you remember anything of the French Revolution? Not this recent bloodless affair, but the one in 89.
Only what my parents told me.
I was a boy of 7 or 8 when it began. I still remember the stories I heard from some of the refugees in our village. People went mad, Gus. Ordinary, decent citizens went wild with a lust for blood, behaved like savages, like wild beasts. I began to have a recurrent nightmare. A head of a pike being carried towards me by a crowd of villainous-looking people, a ghastly face streaming with blood. I always woke up sweating and screaming.
Do you still have the nightmare?
No, I think I lost it when I joined the army. I tell you, nothing I ever saw or heard in all my years as a soldier filled me with such terror.
This is not Paris, Tom.
Are the people here so very different? All that's needed is the spark to set them off. Then they won't be just the ordinary local people that we know. Yes, I do fear it.
I hope to God you may have no reason to.
So do I. Good night, Gus.
On the morning of Saturday, October the 29th, the recorder being due to arrive at 10 o'clock... Colonel Brereton gave orders that we were to proceed with our troops to the courtyard of the jail and to the cattle market and to remain there out of sight of the crowds, which were already gathering, unless given specific orders by himself or a magistrate. The recorder duly arrived and was met at Totterdown by some of the magistrates in the sheriff's coach.
These precautions are of great nonsense. They like me well enough in Bristol. Fated me last time I came because I'd spoken out against the Catholics. Cheering crowds wherever I went, weather all forever and so on.
All the same, I think we should waste no time getting across to the sheriff's coach.
Oh, very well.
Who are those ruffianly-looking fellows? They all seem to be carrying sticks or staves.
Special constable, Sir Charles. They'll be guarding your coach.
Good God. I see the good people of Bristol are out in force. What are they shouting?
Not Weatherall forever, I fear.
Colonel Brereton, I'm glad you've managed to keep your troops out of the way so far.
I hear there's been some trouble with a special constable.
Yes. As soon as the recorder was inside the guild hall, they turned on the crowd and started belaboring anyone they could get hold of. Most of them people who'd done nothing but stand and stare.
I was afraid of this.
They took some prisoners. Yeah, but they were forced to give them up. The people are very angry.
Did Sir Charles get safely to the mansion house?
Yes, but the crowd went with him.
I'd better get back to the barracks. We may be needed.
How many out there now, Mr. Milford?
More than there were. Several hundred. The square's full and they're pressing up against the railings below us. That was a stone.
It's a bloody disgrace. The mansion house under siege. I never heard of such a thing in England. There are a lot of turncoats. Fated me last time I was here. The military should be sent for.
Yeah, but Mr. Hillhouse has already gone.
Look, they're pulling up the railings.
Three of them are advancing on the door.
Look, we shall all be murdered.
You'll have that door down in a few minutes. We must barricade ourselves in. Get some heavy piece of furniture against the door.
The table, by God. Come on, some of you, help me.
Knock on the window.
Yes, sir. There's some feather beds upstairs.
Hey, they're climbing into a downstairs window. Look, there's three of them. Hang on, another five. Oh. God, they'll be up here in a minute.
Listen, they're going downstairs.
The banquet, the wine cellar.
All our stocks are on.
Oh, God.
The cook have arrived.
Colonel Brereton has dismounted. He's taken off his hat and he's waving it to the crowd.
An extraordinary thing to do.
They seem to be allowing him to come in.
Allowing? Things are coming to a pretty pass in this country.
Here, we better move that table back.
Remove the barricade.
Well, gentlemen, you appear to be besieged.
Oh, thank the Lord you're here, Colonel. The mob's growing more violent every minute. They're getting into the kitchens and downstairs rooms.
I've sent some men in to chase them out. It shouldn't be difficult. They seem to be quite a good-tempered crowd. I think the first thing we must do, Mr. Mayor, is to get Sir Charles away from here and out of the city.
I can't leave. I have to open the assizes on Monday.
The people won't be quiet until you do leave, Sir Charles. I cannot take responsibility for your safety.
Yeah, the Colonel is right. You're not safe here, Sir Charles. Your life's in danger.
How do you propose I take my leave? They've got us pretty well surrounded.
Are you a climbing man, sir?
What?
Good head for heights. There's a flat roof over the dining room. Only a small drop from the back windows. From there, you could make your way to the next house, where no doubt you could be lent a change of apparel and make your escape unrecognized.
This is terrible, terrible. Could you do it, Sir Charles?
Yes. By God, I'll have a try.
You should make haste.
Look, I'll show you the flat roof, Sir Charles. You come with me.
Very well. But by God, I'll come back and put all these fellows in the stocks.
Colonel Brereton. The riot act has been read, and we must ask you to clear the square and disperse the mob by force if necessary.
You want me to open fire?
We expect you to use whatever means are necessary to clear the square.
I shall not open fire without a direct order from a magistrate. The responsibility must be yours. Mr. Pinney, as mayor, you are chief magistrate. What are your orders?
What would you advise, Colonel?
I am strongly against it. Most of these people are bystanders, doing nothing worse than a little shouting. None of them are armed.
They're throwing stones.
Yeah, and some of them got iron railings.
You're a reformer, aren't you, Mr. Pinney?
Yes, I am.
You don't want to be remembered as the mayor who ordered a massacre.
No, indeed, I don't, Colonel. I am most anxious that all should pass off peacefully, if possible.
Good. Well, I think my men can walk them away in a little while without any loss of life or limb. Then you will all be able to go home if you want. We shall patrol the square through the night and be responsible for the peace of the city.
Now listen to me, my good fellows. The recorder is leaving Bristol. You have sent him away as you wanted to do. Now please disperse and go quietly to your homes. Let us first give three cheers for the king. Hip hip!
Hooray!
Hip hip!
Hooray!
Hip hip!
Hooray!
for reform, sir?
Of course I am, as much as you are. But you won't get reform by throwing stones and breaking windows. Why, I know you. You stopped my horse from bolting the other evening.
That's right, sir. Davis. Christopher Davis. There's a feast laid out in there, sir. Fowls, game, pastries. A great mountain of food for a few gluttonous men. While poor folk are starving. It's a wicked shame.
These things will be put right in time. But we must leave it to the men in Parliament.
You know where I got this bottle of wine? I got it from the cellars. They got racks and racks of it bought with our money. Well, I won't drink this bottle.
Now you've made your protest. Be as sensible as you were the other evening and go home before any worse trouble breaks out.
I will. But tell me first. Are you for reform?
I've told you I am.
You're a good man. A very good man. Although you're wearing a uniform. Let me shake you by the hand.
I'll shake the hand as well.
What does he mean by shaking hands with those ruffians? Fancies himself a popular figure, perhaps.
Oh, that tall fellow near him is drinking a bottle of our wine. And he's waving his umbrella now and shouting something. Oh, he's a respectably dressed man, too.
Someone should take his name. We are going to need some names when this is over.
Keep walking your men through the crowd, Captain Gage. We shall soon disperse them.
If you must use swords, use the flat only.
It's a large crowd, sir. Could we not fire a couple of shots and send them off?
We could, but we are not going to do so.
It only took 10 minutes to clear St. Petersfield at Manchester of 10,000 people, but they left hundreds of innocent bystanders dead and dying on the grass. I don't want that sort of victory in my city.
Will you please all disperse and go to your homes?
Well, gentlemen, the crowd is beginning to disperse. I think quite soon you will be able to go home.
It's taking some time, isn't it?
It does take some time to clear crowds without using unnecessary force. We must be patient a little longer. Now what's happening?
Well, they're bringing in two wounded soldiers, one streaming with blood.
Colonel Brannerton, two of my men have been hit by flying stones. One is badly injured.
Poor fellows. You'd better tear up some curtains to make some bandages. We'll get them to the infirmary as soon as possible.
You still call this a good-tempered crowd, Colonel?
There are some rough elements, obviously. But it is still mainly a good-humored crowd, and they are beginning to go home.
Sir, can I take a couple of men and cut down the assailants?
Much better not. We must not be provoked into answering violence with violence. Walk your men through the crowds again. If you must attack, use the flat of your swords only.
This is the strangest operation I've ever taken part in.
Colonel Barrett, are you going to stand by and see your men knocked about by these ruffians?
I am very sorry about the men, of course, but better two men injured than a riot breaking out. I'll go and speak to the crowd again.
That will do no good. The young captain was quite right. The man who threw those stones should be cut down or shot.
Well, why didn't you tell the colonel to fire then, if that's your view?
But that was your duty. You are chief magistrate.
Oh, I do wish we'd never allowed Sir Charles to come here.
Unless you immediately disperse, I shall be forced to use violence.
The people are beginning to move away.
Quiet here, Captain Warrington.
Pretty quiet, sir, at last.
Good. Some youths are breaking windows at the council house. I sent Captain Gage off to scatter them. Otherwise, I think the city is fairly peaceful.
It's midnight.
Yes, and the night is cold. People will be glad to get home to their beds. There's nothing much to stay out for now the magistrates have all gone home, and they know the recorder has left Bristol.
Have you heard any news of him, sir?
Yes, he's safely out of the city. Disguised himself as a postillion, apparently, and got away unrecognized.
I didn't imagine there was so much political feeling in Bristol.
I'm afraid most of the crowds we had this evening know little of reform. It's a word to pin their hopes on. Many of them are wretchedly poor, you know, and the law deals harshly with them. A man can be transported for 7 years for demanding food in a menacing way. You can't blame them for supporting any prospect of change.
Are you in favor of reform, sir?
In favor? You might as well ask whether I'm in favor of the railways. I think reform will come as the railways are coming. And no doubt it will be an excellent thing. There's plenty that needs putting right in the country. You young people will see a lot of changes.
Well, if it continues as quiet as this, I shall be able to celebrate my daughter's birthday tomorrow.
Her birthday, sir?
Yes, I hate disappointing the children. After all, one is only 6 years old once.
I suppose so.
You're not married yet?
No, sir.
Well, don't waste too much time about it. Don't follow my example and wait till you're nearly 40. Gives a centre to one's life, you know. Sense of proportion. My God, what's that? I hope the 14th haven't got into difficulties.
I'll go and see, sir.
Come on, boy. It will crack. It will crack.
A bit of trouble, sir.
What sort of trouble?
They started throwing stones at the troops, and Captain Gage opened fire. A passerby was accidentally shot.
Shot?
Shot dead, sir.
God damn it. Now all hell will break loose.
On Sunday morning, October the 30th...
Will you please speak up, miss?
Oh, yes. On Sunday morning, October the 30th, my parents and I drove to morning service. It had not been possible to have the civic procession, but my father thought it important that we should go to church as usual to show we were not intimidated by a rabble. As we approached Queen's Square, we heard a great noise and saw that there were crowds there, mostly poor and ragged-looking people shouting and booing. Two squadrons of dragoons were drawn up, and I saw Captain Gage and Captain Warrington.
Should be attacked! I knew it wasn't safe to go out. For heaven's sake, my dear, let us go home at once before we're all murdered.
Quiet, my dear. There's no danger. Beaton, you must turn round at once. You must get back.
What is going to happen? Will they open fire? I hope they will not fire on those poor little people.
Be quiet, child. Beaton, there are crowds surging up behind us. Better draw into that alleyway. Quickly, man, quickly.
Away, sir.
Captain Gage is leading his troop away.
Can't imagine why.
Oh, look at those poor little children. I didn't know there were people like this in our town.
Ah, there's Colonel Brereton. What in God's name is going on, Colonel?
Rioting has broken out again. It's now much more serious. I had to withdraw my picket from the Mansion House to rest them early this morning. A crowd collected and broke in. The special constables were useless.
What about the mayor? Is he safe?
He managed to escape across the roofs. I believe he's now at the council house with some of the magistrates. I'm afraid the 14th and the chief cause of the trouble. They shot a passerby during the night and the crowd are furious with them. I've just sent them back to their quarters.
That leaves only one squadron here. It's quite insufficient.
The third are still respected by the crowd, and with their help, I hope to prevent things getting any worse. It's all we can do until reinforcements arrive tomorrow.
It is not all you can do, Colonel. Your men must open fire and clear this mob from the square.
If they fire with a mob in this mood, the whole city will be given up to slaughter.
Your men will soon scatter these people.
I think not. They've been on duty for 24 hours and are very tired. Their horses also. It will be murdered, every one of them. I cannot see my men uselessly sacrificed and the city becoming a battlefield.
Colonel Brereton, I am a magistrate and I am ordering you to open fire.
I am afraid I must refuse.
You refuse?
I will take full responsibility.
This is insupportable.
We shall be attacked. I know we shall.
You are quite safe at present, ma'am. But I should advise you, Mr. Milford, to get your wife and daughter home as soon as possible. You can go quite safely by the back streets, I think. I must get back to my men.
Is it a riot? I've never seen a riot.
And I hope to God you'll not see one now. Bateson, take the ladies home. When you're back, see that all the doors and windows are locked and barred.
Sir?
No one is to go out. Now, my dear, there's no need to be alarmed. You'll be safe.
Are you not coming, Papa?
No, I'm still at the council house to see the mayor. Something has got to be done.
Soldiers coming across our street. It's the 14th. They have blue uniforms. Oh, they're being pelted with stones.
There are threes. Face about and present arms.
Oh, no. Now don't fire.
There are threes. Recover arms. Will you please clear the street? Get the carriage out of the way. You're in my line of fire.
Oh, come to Gage.
Rear threes. Present arms. Fire.
Oh,
Present arms!
Something for
him. Of course we can't stop. Get us home, Bates, as quickly as you can.
But what is being done?
We've done what we can. Some of us have been knocking on doors, urging people to come and help us defend the city, but very few have come forward.
Some of the people were very abusive.
We should have some plan ready. I said we should have a plan.
You suggested asking the political union, and they wouldn't help us. And now I'm sure you shouldn't trust them if they did offer.
Yes. Good morning.
Oh, Colonel, what's the latest news?
Not good, I'm afraid. 14th Dragoons have fired again, against my orders, have killed at least one man and wounded several. The mood of the mob is now very violent against them. They're endangering their lives and everybody else's. I should like permission to send the 14th out of the city.
Out of the city? But we shall be defenseless.
We shall have the 3rd Dragoon Guards, a well-disciplined force. Surely there is some civil guard you can call upon. Where are the special constables?
Well, they all seem to have dispersed. Mm-hmm. We can't trace them at all.
We can call on the posse comitatus tomorrow.
By tomorrow, I hope to have military reinforcements. It's today that we need them.
Oh, it's been very difficult. We've done what we can. I don't think we can agree to the 14th being sent away.
No, certainly not. The city's in peril. They must stay and defend.
You don't understand the temper of this mob. Already they have nearly unseated 3 of my men. Once they are pulled off their horses, the dragoons wouldn't last 2 minutes.
Colonel, that drunken rabble is breaking windows and doors in Queen Square, and they must be stopped. There's a great deal of property at stake.
I am more concerned with lives than property, Mr. Milford. I'd rather a few windows were broken than my men torn to pieces.
Yes, soldiers, it's their duty to defend the city.
Against an invading army, yes. This is not an invading army. My soldiers are men like other men. They have families, lives to be lived. Why should they be slaughtered to save your property? If you're so anxious about your goods, you should have made adequate arrangements. I have been given 93 men to control these thousands. If I am to manage it, I must have your support. I repeat, I want permission to send the 14th out of town.
We cannot give it. I speak for the whole corporation.
Yes.
Then I must send them away on my own responsibility.
You seem to forget, Colonel Barrington. You are supposed to take your orders from us.
You have given no reasonable orders. I have been on duty all night trying to save the peace of this city while most of you slept in your beds. I have asked for help and you offer nothing. Now I shall rely on my own judgment. In my opinion, you are not fit to be magistrates. You're just a bunch of incompetent tradesmen. Good day to you, gentlemen.
Do you think in the event of revolution breaking out, we could rely on Colonel Barrington?
Good Lord, no. I'd rather deal with the radicals than him. At least we know where they stand. Colonel Barrington has taken the law into his own hands, and God knows where it will end.
Well, Gus, how are things here?
4 men cut by flying stones and pieces of iron, but none seriously hurt. I suppose you know that several people have been taken to the infirmary with shot wounds and saber cuts.
Yes. I am going to send the 14th out of town. They're a danger to us all.
The magistrates have agreed.
No.
Is that wise, Tom?
I think so. I can't rely on them for direction. I must take decisions for myself. If these people are provoked again, there will be burning and plunder and murder in the streets on a scale I dare not imagine.
You've asked for reinforcements.
Yes, but they cannot arrive before tomorrow. And they may have difficulty in getting through to us. I hear there have already been risings at Bath and Merthyr Tydfil in sympathy with the rioters here. They will try to delay the troops from setting out.
So, this is the situation you dreaded.
Yes, but now that it is come, I find myself ready for it.
What do you propose to do?
Well, first, send Gage and his troop out of the city. Then I shall speak to the mob.
Captain Gage, was the troop of the 14th Dragoons ordered into Queen Square under your command on Sunday morning, 30th of October?
Yes, about 10 o'clock.
And did Lieutenant Colonel Brereton sometime afterwards order the 14th to leave the square and return to their quarters?
Colonel Brereton ordered me to retire immediately with the troop to their quarters, as it was evident we were the whole and sole cause of the disturbance.
And were you later ordered by Lieutenant Colonel Brunton to leave Bristol with a squadron of the 14th Dragoons?
I was ordered by Lieutenant Colonel Brereton to leave Bristol on Sunday, as I imagine, between 1 and 2 o'clock.
Now, state the manner and the place in which that order was conveyed.
I received the order verbally from Lieutenant Colonel Brereton in the yard of Fisher's livery stables. The words were, Captain Gage, march your squadron immediately out of Bristol. If you do not, the whole squadron will be murdered. At that moment, my own horse and 7 privates were at Lee's livery stables. Some delay ensued from my having to send for them. Colonel Brereton came to me a second time.
Will you get out of town?
May I ask where we are to go, sir?
Anywhere you please. Only go away.
Hey, what about Keynsham?
Keynsham will do as well as anywhere else. There are livery stables there. Now, Captain Gage, mark your squadron off at the trot.
Sir, prepare to mount.
What's happening here now, Captain Waddington?
The crowds are increasing all the time, sir. They seem very hostile.
Walk your men round the square again, Captain. Try to disperse them, but on no account use force. We are few and we are all tired. They are thousands. If you're attacked, you may use the flat of your sword, but nothing else. Do you understand?
Yes, sir, but...
Well?
If I may suggest, could we not charge them? My men are not too tired. They are ready and eager to have a try.
I'm sure they are. Have you any experience of a mob, Captain?
Not as large as this one, sir.
If its move turns really black, it could have us off our horses in no time, and they'd make mincemeat of us. A mob has a will of its own voice, and its own mindless actions. It is essential we keep them reasonably good-tempered until the other troops get through to us. Now, I'd like you to clear a way through to the center of the crowd. I'm going to speak to them. See what I can do by persuasion.
You'll be in great danger, sir.
I'm not worried about that.
But surely I...
There is a tide in the affairs of men which taken us a flood. Do you know your Julius Caesar, Captain?
Sir?
A great play. I've been in the shallows too long. Move forward, then. Give me a bit of space. My good fellows! I know there has been some shooting.
And
that was against my orders. And there will be an inquiry. I have sent the 14th out of Bristol. The recorder left Bristol last night and will not be coming back. You all know me, you know I tell the truth. Now, for God's sake, leave this square and go quietly to your homes. This is Sunday, a day of peace. 3 cheers for the king. Hip hip! Hip hip! Hip hip!
He's telling the truth. He's a good man.
You here again, Mr. Davis? Have you no wife and family waiting for you at home?
My wife's in church. She's a good woman. Believes all the clergy tell her. But I say they're hypocrites.
If she's a good woman, you should be thankful. Go home and eat your Sunday dinner she's cooked for you.
There's many as will have no Sunday dinner.
You will do no good by staying here. The riot act has been read many times. You are all breaking the law. But for God's sake, go home. And persuade these men to do so too, if you have any influence.
You're right, sir. I believe you're right. What am I doing here? My wife told me not to come.
To the
Bridewell! Go to your homes! There must be no more destruction, I beg you! Go to your homes!
To the Bridewell!
Look at that, Miss Herpa! The blaze of liberty! The prison's burnt down! They burnt the treadmill, set all the poor wretches free! Isn't it glorious?
You're drunk, Mr. Davis! For heaven's sake, stop shouting and get away from this mob! You'll be noted!
I've done nothing wrong! I waited years to see this! You can't oppress the people forever! This is the best moment of my life!
I vote we go to Lawford's Gate Jail next! To the Bishop's Palace!
Don't toss for it, get it! Heads to jail, tails to palace! Fuck!
Alex Tim.
Down with the churches, I say! Amend the rotten pavements with them!
No more fires! People will be injured and killed!
Leave us alone, and we'll leave you alone!
Colonel Brereton, what's to be done?
I've done all I can. Why in heaven's name did you start all this?
We tried to arouse people to a sense of their rights. This is anarchy. Mindless destruction.
Whatever you meant to do, you've raised a whirlwind.
I believe we could still save the day if we could get some cooperation from the magistrates. I've just been to the council house to offer the help of my union, but they're too scared to accept. All they're thinking about is how to save their own property. However, I shall get some men together and do what I can.
I wish you good luck.
Mr. Ludlow, you are town clerk of this town, are you not?
I am.
Did you hear, or were you engaged in a discussion which took place between some of the civil authorities and Lieutenant Colonel Brereton as to the expediency of recalling the 14th Dragoon?
I was.
Now be pleased to relate what passed.
Well, many of the citizens were attending in the large outer hall of the Guildhall. An account had been brought that the Bridewell, or the jail, or both, had been attacked by the mob. The citizens asked why the soldiers were not brought up, and said, "We will hazard our lives if supported by troops, but we will not act without them." I spoke to Colonel Brereton before the persons in the hall, representing the dreadful state the city was in. I distinctly said to him, "Colonel Brereton, I demand that you bring back the 14th.
I cannot do it, sir.
Cannot?
I cannot and I will not bring them back. There would not be a man left alive the next morning.
If no one else reports your conduct to the authorities, Colonel Brereton, I will do so myself.
Do what you please, but I must get back and try to control the mob.
We must report his behavior to the Horse Guards.
And the newspapers. He must be exposed in all the newspapers.
I agree. There'll be questions asked, you know. Most probably questions in the House of Commons. We must make sure the blame goes to the right quarter.
If we're not all destroyed first by his insane actions.
Didn't work, Gus. I couldn't hold them.
You've done your best.
Center of the city looks like a burning hell. Crowds getting drunk on stolen wine. Some have died in the flames, I believe. There's not a constable in sight and not a magistrate to be found.
Isn't it time to bring back the 14th, Tom?
No! I have absolutely refused. So far, the mob have only attacked property, not persons. The 14th come back, they'll be slaughtered. The heads will be carried on pikes through the city, and that will only be the beginning. I will save this town from revolution if I can.
Steady. You can hardly stand. When did you last get any rest?
I don't know. Friday night, I suppose. What day is it now?
It was 1 o'clock on Monday morning. You've been on duty nearly 48 hours. You must get some sleep.
Can't. I'm in charge. There is no one else.
You can leave Captain Warrington on duty. Go to the adjutant's quarters and get 4 or 5 hours good sleep.
Warrington's ill, poor fellow. He's got an ague. It's been raining for hours. It's a wonder it doesn't put the fires out. I've told him to stay on call.
He's a young man. Let him take over for a bit.
Captain Warrington to be found here.
Here I am, who wants me?
Captain, we come with an urgent message from the mayor.
Thank you. Well,
This is addressed to Colonel Brereton. He'll be back at 6. I'll hand it to him now.
We can't wait until 6 o'clock, Captain. This is very urgent. We understand that you are in command of the troops in the Colonel's absence. Please open it.
Very well. I direct you as commanding officer of His Majesty's troops to take the most vigorous, effective, and decisive measures in your power to quell the existing riot and prevent further destruction of property. Signed, Charles Pinney. I cannot act on this, gentlemen. It must wait for my commanding officer.
In his absence, you are in command. Will you please order out the troops and charge the rioters?
Colonel Brereton has expressly forbidden the use of any force.
Never mind, Colonel Brereton. You are in charge now.
I am under Colonel Brereton's orders.
This is no time to wait for orders. A second city in the land is blazing. The mayor has asked you to defend it.
Where is Mr. Pinney? The paper is only headed Bristol 3 o'clock in the morning.
It's advisable to keep the mayor's whereabouts secret at the moment.
You can take it from us. He is in Bristol.
What is the matter with you? Are you ill?
But I have a fever, a chill. But I am quite ready and able to go out if I have proper authority. If I do order up the troops, I shall require a magistrate to go every step of the way with me.
That wouldn't do.
No, with the rioters and their present fury, it is better the magistrates are not seen in the city.
Then I cannot order out the troops.
Are you refusing to set out?
Without proper authority, yes.
You will regret this, Captain Warrington. Come along, John. You're wasting our time here. There will be a reckoning when this madness is over, Captain. Do not be in any doubt of that.
Colonel Brereton. Mm-hmm. I'm very sorry to disturb you, sir, but the magistrates insisted that I woke you.
Oh. What o'clock is it?
5 in the morning, sir.
It's very light.
The fire, sir. They say you can see a pin drop 7 miles away.
Is the rioting still going on?
Why, yes, sir. The whole of the center of the city is alight. Nothing is being done. The men with the fire appliances are afraid to come out. The magistrates insist that you order out the troops at once.
It's a nightmare. There is nothing more I can do.
But, sir, we must try to save the city.
Worse than my worst imaginings.
The men are very willing to have a try.
It will be a massacre of us or them.
May I tell the magistrate you will be coming down, sir?
Very well. I will dress and come down. You may tell the gentlemen I will be with them in a few minutes.
Thank you, sir.
You're doing your best. This was never in the rule book, was it?
Emma, why are you not in bed?
I couldn't sleep. It's so light.
But is Bristol burning?
You've been down there. What is happening?
Fires are spreading. Gangs of youths and boys are plundering private houses, dragging out anything they can lay hands on. The troops are there doing practically nothing. It's appalling.
I wonder if Captain Warrington is safe.
He's safe enough. That young man has cost the city thousands of pounds.
What?
He refused to go out and charge the mob. More than an hour was wasted until we get hold of the colonel, and meanwhile most of the north side of Queen Square was fired.
I'm sure he had good reasons for not taking out his troops.
You know nothing about it, my dear. What is that sound?
I believe it is... Yes, it is. Soldiers. A great many of them marching down the street.
That'll be the troops from Cardiff. I heard they'd landed. Thank God. All this will soon be over now.
What will happen?
They will charge the rioters, of course, and make short work of them. They're mostly half insensible with drink by now and won't be able to offer much resistance.
The soldiers will use their swords?
I should hope so. That rabble will be routed in half an hour or less, those who are left alive. And we've got a list of the ringleaders.
There'll be plenty transported and hanged when they come before the courts. They'll soon learn they can't revolt against authority and expect to win. Did you hear they burned the new jail and let the prisoners out?
They must have felt very desperate.
Desperate? Don't you go getting any sentimental ideas about those creatures.
They're trash to you, aren't they, Papa?
What do you mean?
Those poor ragged people. You hate and despise them.
Emma!
As you do your slaves.
You're talking in a very silly, childish manner.
Excuse me, Papa. I think I'm just beginning to grow up.
Now listen to me, miss.
Good night, Papa. I'm going back to my room.
He seemed incapable of doing anything, as though he had collapsed inwardly. Oh, I don't know how else to describe it.
You describe it very well, Captain Warrington. What exactly happened when the fresh troops arrived? Here we are.
Thank you, Lionsworth. They seemed to pour in from all over the place. And the 14th was brought back, as you know. The centre of the city was full of soldiers wanting direction. The colonel seemed unable to give the order. At last, Major Mackworth called to him. Colonel, you must instantly charge. Colonel Brereton rode with the rest. Rioters were easy prey, mostly drunk and defenceless. It was horrible sight. I was much affected by it, and I believe the colonel was also.
He was unwell for some time after.
I wanted to say all this in court, but I was told my evidence could not be accepted. It would reflect upon my own conduct during the riots. Of course, I immediately requested an inquiry into my conduct. What else could I do? And you know the result. I am to be court-martialed also.
Yes, I was sorry to hear that.
Oh, I feel I'm living in a bad dream. I cannot believe such a thing could happen to me. It is a terrible disgrace for my family.
You did your duty as you saw it. That will appear at the trial.
Oh, Loinsworth, I hope so. I'm relying on Colonel Brereton's evidence.
I'm sure he will say all he can in your favour. He hasn't forgotten you, despite his own troubles.
How is he?
I think the long strain of waiting for this court-martial has told on him. He's anxious, of course, about the result, but I think sustained by a conviction that he acted rightly.
Another victory to you, Gus. I'm afraid I played a poor hand.
Will you have another game?
No, no, I've no heart for it.
It didn't go badly today. The mayor did you good service by cutting such a poor figure.
He certainly seemed rather confused, poor man.
Don't waste your pity on him. He lost no time in trying to shift all the blame onto you. The corporation have been very much criticized, you know.
It was a disaster. A total disaster. It haunts my dreams. But I don't see that I could have acted differently. Could I have fired on the crowds on Saturday and killed innocent people? Could I have retained the 14th and let them be murdered? I am convinced that I was right to do as I did.
I'm sure you were, Tom.
And I didn't lose a single man.
That's a cause for satisfaction.
I was right. But how to convince the court? 11 charges.
You have a good chance, Tom.
If only I had Warrington's evidence. Poor fellow. His army career means everything to him. I'm dreading tomorrow. Gage will be in the witness stand again. I believe that young man hates me.
Hates you? Isn't that rather strong?
He's an arrogant young man, and I made him look foolish in front of a crowd of people.
Captain Gage, on Sunday morning, the 30th of October, Lieutenant Colonel Broughton, prior to the march of the squadron of the 14th from Bristol, make any inquiry or call for any report as to the state and efficiency of the men and the horses?
None whatever, on Sunday morning.
I see. Now, Captain, I attach considerable importance to your answers to the next questions. In what state, as to the freshness and efficiency for duty, were the men and the horses at the time of the squadron marching out of Bristol?
I conceive the squadron was capable of performing any duty cavalry could be called upon to perform.
Do you consider the construction of Fisher's livery stables to be such as to have enabled you and your squadron to have defended it against any attack from the rioters?
I conceive that six men, three at each gateway, could hold it against any mob.
He's right, of course he's right.
Now, as to the construction of Fisher's livery stables, are there folding doors at each end of the side which close on the inside and are secure unless forced from without?
Why must they go on with these questions?
Does the prisoner wish to make a statement?
Yes. The livery stables were defensible. The men and horses were fit for any duty.
Very well. We'll take the next charge. You may stand down, Captain Gage.
Charges which carry a culpability altogether unprecedented in the case of a British officer.
I told him the rioting must be put down. The square must be cleared. His answer, the troops cannot and shall not fire.
For that he, Colonel Brotherton, conducted himself in a feeble and temporizing manner calculated to encourage the rioters.
The town clerk directed Colonel Brotherton immediately to bring back the 14th. He replied, I will not, sir.
For that he ordered the whole of the squadron of the 14th Light Dragoons to move from Bristol to Keynsham in violation of the duty wherewith he was entrusted.
I sent him out of town and the mob cheered.
He repeatedly refused to comply with the directions and entreaties of the said magistrates to recall the said squadron from Keynsham.
He said, I cannot and I will not bring back the 14th.
And when it was his duty to resist and put down the rioters, weakly yielded to or temporized with them, frequently shaking hands with them.
I saw him pass and repass continually, take off his hat and huzzah to the mob, who were running after him, taking all of his answers. He pulled off his hat and made his obeisance to the lowest of the low.
Such conduct on the part of Lieutenant Colonel Brotherton being highly disgraceful to his character as an officer, tending to destroy the confidence of the troops in their officers and to reflect dishonor on His Majesty's service.
There is no point in continuing with this.
The next witness.
My dear fellow, you've hardly touched your dinner.
I have no appetite.
Take it away, please. More wine, Tom.
As you wish.
Bring another bottle, waiter.
By God, I was a fool to ask Earl to undertake my defense.
I think you bewildered him with your new instructions.
It's perfectly simple. I will plead guilty to some of the charges and accept whatever censure or punishment they give me. But they must end this trial. I cannot sit through another day of it.
You know the court cannot agree to that.
How many more witnesses are they going to bring? There must have been thousands of people in the square that night. And they all saw me wave my cap to the crowd. They all, it seems, heard me say I would not bring back the 14th. How many more, for God's sake?
Tom, you must try to calm yourself. Take a little more wine.
The fact is, Gus, I am guilty.
Oh, come.
Guilty.
You were put in a difficult, almost an impossible situation. You may have made some errors of judgment.
I believe now that I did. Have you ever had the experience, Gus, of an extraordinary dream in which everything you do seems perfectly normal? And when you wake up, you realize how bizarre it was. During those 48 hours or so, I was completely certain of all I did. I've never been so sure I was right. And in the last 2 months, although, of course, I thought about it constantly, I never dared look deeply into my mind. Now, well, now I am awake.
You acted in good faith.
No. That is what I told myself. But I did not.
when I address the mob, Gus, when they turned towards me, when they seized me by the hand and cheered me and appeared to listen to what I said.
You told me yourself you had a great fear of a mob.
I felt fear, yes. But exhilaration also. It was like sitting astride a wild, powerful stallion, learning to control it. A sense of power, Gus. And a wonder that I, an obscure middle-aged recruiting officer, should be able to control a great mob. I thought I could save the city. I thought I'd been chosen for that purpose. But then I could not do it. I wasn't big enough for it. I made unforgivable errors.
Good evening, Colonel. Major Loinsworth.
Professor Herapath, will you join us in a bottle of wine?
Thank you. I was not able to be in court today. How was it?
Not a good day.
I'm sorry.
My daughters will have to live in the shadow of my disgrace.
Come, Tom, they are 6 and 3 years old.
They have their lives to lead.
It's been a bad day for Christopher Davis, too. I've just come from visiting him in jail.
Are the sentences out yet?
Well, have you not heard? Davis and 4 others are sentenced to death.
To death?
They're to be hanged in 2 weeks' time.
How was Davis?
In a state of abject terror and misery. He's made a rapid return to the religion he so much despised and is reading tracts and so on.
Have you told him the Reform Bill is almost certain to be brought in now?
Yes, but the abstract ideal does not have much meaning when one is facing a violent death. Davis is no hero.
And no villain either, I should say. Just a foolish man who thought his dream had come true. We probably both lived blameless, mediocre lives until that night. How quickly one destroys oneself.
You must try not to despond. After all, the trial isn't over yet.
That's true. It is not over. Will you excuse me? I must get home.
Tom, will you not come back to our house tonight? My wife would be so pleased.
Thank you, no. The little girls, you know. I must see them.
Good night, Colonel. Many of us have... grateful for your forbearance and good sense in recent events.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Good night, Tom, my dear fellow. Don't sit up late worrying. It does no good, you know.
You always give me sound advice, Gus. I'll try to take it. Good night.
Thank goodness he has his children to keep him from total despair. I'm afraid it will go badly with her.
Yes. I'm afraid reform will have been bought at a high cost.
I think so far the corporation has come out of it quite well.
Oh, I hope so.
Your evidence about demanding the return of the 14th was very strong and clear.
Oh, thank you.
Emma, my dear, leave your tinkling, will you?
Brereton has no chance of acquittal, I should say.
Oh, not a chance.
I suppose we shall be called upon for Captain Warrington's court-martial next week.
It will be cashiered without doubt.
Pity he can't be transported. We don't want that sort of young man in the country.
He's cost me a small fortune in property by his inactivity.
It's my belief he was on the side of the rioters. I hear he expressed some sympathy with the men who were to be hanged.
Oh, he'll be utterly disgraced, whatever the sentence.
You seem to take great satisfaction in the ruin of other people's lives, so long as your wealth and prestige are protected.
How dare you speak like that to your elders?
I'm sorry to offend you, Papa, but I find I can no longer respect your judgment. And I cannot keep silent while you speak in that way of someone whom I do respect.
Leave the room.
Gladly.
I must apologize for my daughter. She has been too much indulged.
Oh, I know what young girls are. Has she formed an attachment, do you think?
To a young man who is about to be disgraced? I should hope not.
Well, marry her off. That's my advice. You'll have no more trouble.
She has changed very much recently. Sometimes, Ludlow, I think everything is changing.
Miss Milford.
Oh, Professor Herapath. Oh, wonderful to run into you.
Even though literally.
But should you be out unaccompanied so late in the evening?
I'm going to Miss Bell's. I hope she will take me in. I cannot stay in the same house as my father any longer.
That sounds a rather drastic decision.
My parents' ideas, which I accepted all these years, now seem to me totally, wickedly wrong.
To start thinking for oneself is always a good thing. Leaving home without resources is another. Let me take you to Miss Bell's. We'll discuss it together.
My dear Gus, when one of you said this evening, the trial is not yet over, it gave me hope and resolution. Judgment has not yet been given. I am not yet disgraced. No explanations. It will be construed as an admission of guilt.
Mrs. Pigforth! Some wood for this fire. Mrs. Prickforth? All gone to bed, I suppose. Well. Now then. My dear daughters. I did not come and kiss you goodnight as usual. This evening, much as I long to see you, I was afraid the sight of you would weaken my resolve. Why should I burden children with my emotions? Into the fire, then, with the lot. That's the best way.
Major Loinsworth, would you please describe to the court what you found when you reached Colonel Brereton's house?
Colonel Brereton was lying in his bed. He had taken off his shoes, jacket, and waistcoat. He had his revolver in his left hand. He had shot himself in the heart and must have died instantly.
Oh, it was good of you to come and see me, sir, so soon after this tragedy. I'm afraid you've lost a friend.
A good friend, yes. But now we must think of the living. You've lost your chief witness.
Yes, I had counted on his testimony. But at all events, I shall not say anything in my evidence which would prejudice Colonel Brereton's good name.
You men of honour. You're quite right, of course. But I believe that you must now face the very worst that can happen. The authorities are determined to have a scapegoat. You may be cashiered.
Yes, I've thought of it, of course. If that happens, I shall never be able to face my family.
I cannot speak for your family. But remember, you are still very young, with your life before you, and you have many loyal friends. I hear the courtroom is likely to be packed with them, so take courage.
Yes, I will try to. And if it does go badly for me, Colonel Brereton has shown me the right course for an officer and a gentleman.
His circumstances were rather different from yours. Which reminds me, I have a letter for you from Miss Milford.
Emma Milford? I thought I should never hear from her again.
I think you should read it. Now.
Yes. Dear Captain Warrington, I hope this letter will reach you. I am much watched at home at present, and shall have to rely on a younger sister to dispatch it.
I would like you to know how much I admire you for not obeying the magistrate's instructions to fire on the mob, and how distressed I am to hear of the result of it. Since the riots, I've realized I am much in disagreement with my father over many important things. I wanted to leave home, but Miss Bell, you remember my telling you about her, has persuaded me to stay here until I come of age in 2 years' time. Then I cannot be prevented from going to live in her household and helping her and some other ladies in a school they are starting for ragged children, a venture I look forward to with my whole heart. Alas, I shall not be allowed to be present at your trial, but I shall be thinking of you constantly. I implore you to have courage, and to remember that whatever the verdict, I shall always, so long as you wish it, be your true friend, Emma Milford.
Emma Milford. She is a very remarkable girl.
Miss Milford is a friend worth having.
Yes.
She has pioneering blood in her veins, you know. I fancy she's not a girl who would easily give up what she had set out to do. And you must not give up either, Captain Warrington. Sometimes takes more courage to live than to die, you know. Will you give me your word that whatever the outcome next week, you will not follow Colonel Brereton's example afterwards?
You read my mood correctly. Very well, Major Loinsworth. You have my word.
Thank you. We have had enough tragedy today.
There is something I would like to ask you before you leave.
Yes?
Did Colonel Brereton leave a note?
No. The fireplace in his room was full of charred remains of paper on which he'd been writing. He obviously decided against leaving any message.
So, we shall never know.
Why he took his life?
No. I can understand why he took his life. I mean, we'll never know just what was in his mind during the riots. Why he gave those orders to me and others and acted as he did.
We shall never know the whole truth, if there is such a thing. Doubtless he will be harshly judged. I knew Tom Brereton for 20 years, and I can only say he was a most kind, benevolent, and humane man. He had, if anything, too much of a sense of honor.
A Man of Too Much Honor was written by Elizabeth Holford. The cast: Colonel Brereton, Alan Moore; Milford, Howard Gurney; Loinsworth, Andrew Seacombe; Warrington, Stephen Garlick; Emma, Patience Tomlinson; Mrs. Milford, Ursula Hanray; Ludlow, Roger Snowden; Pinney, Rex Holdsworth; Herapath, Christian Rodsker; Davis, Mark Buffery; Prosecutor, Hedley Goodall; and Sir Charles Wetherill, Esmond Rideout. The programme was directed in Bristol by Brian Miller.